I'm Kevin Kelly. This program's called Live and Local, your connection to local music and more. And on the program today, we're very privileged to have the pianist Rohan De Silva, who is best known currently as the regular collaborator with violinist Itzhak Perlman. He's worked with a great many other well-known violinists, Cho Young Lin, Midori, Joshua Bell, Kiyoka Takezawa, Gil Shaham, Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg, and many others. And he'll be performing tomorrow night at the University of Illinois at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts at 7:30 with University of Illinois faculty violinist Stefan Milenkovich. Stefan was on the program a week ago, Wednesday, so we got to talk to him and sort of hear his side of the story, and we'll hear Rohan's side of the story. There's not really sides of the story, but sides of the collaboration coming up in a little while. Here's Rohan De Silva with violinist Kiyoka Takezawa in the opening movement of the sonata by Claude Debussy. The opening movement of Claude Debussy's Sonata for Violin and Piano with violinist Kiyoka Takezawa and pianist Rohan De Silva. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and on this portion of the program, we have pianist Rohan De Silva, who is going to be joined by violinist Stefan Milenkovich on Wednesday, March 3rd at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. And we had a chance to have Mr. Milenkovich on the show this past week, and that was a lot of fun. And he talked a little about Rohan De Silva in very favorable terms, of course. And so I'm really pleased that we're actually able to have the man himself with us here. And I met him, about a year ago, I think, on Valentine's Day, when you and Rohan and Ani Aznavourian were with the Prairie Ensemble playing Beethoven's Triple Concerto, which was a great deal of fun. I appreciate you joining us right now.
Thank you, Kevin. It's fun to be here, and thank you for inviting me to join your program. I was very much looking forward to this. And so I guess, you know, we're going to have fun on this program.
Well, I hope so. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about was something that I hadn't known until Stefan mentioned it on our interview, and that is that you used to play the violin, or maybe even still do.
Well, that's very interesting. I know. Well, I started violin when I was 5 years old in Sri Lanka, but the piano I started when I was 3. And to make a long story short, I was a double major in London at the Royal Academy of Music, violin and piano. And believe it or not, I played the cello as a second instrument for 9 years. And when I decided to come to New York to the Juilliard School, well, you know, it's very expensive to study here, so I decided, you know, I've got to decide on one instrument after doing a double major. And I decided, well, I feel a little bit more comfortable with the piano, and not that I love the violin. As you can see, I end up playing with all the violinists because that's my strong point as a collaborator. So I decided that I was going to pursue piano even more intensively, you know, and that's what I'm doing now.
So what happened to the cello?
Well, the cello was a second instrument. I mean, I did that for 9 years, studied it in Sri Lanka, and then pursued it as a second study in London, which is kind of rare when you're doing double major. But I love, you know, I love music, and I love playing all these instruments. So now I don't play either of the string instruments because, first of all, time factor, and I decided to specialize on the piano. So
have you done any work with cellists? I mean, as long as you were going to be spending a lot of time with the string players.
Yeah, in London I did quite a lot of work with my colleagues there, and even here. Colleagues at the Juilliard School, and, you know, of course, Ani Aznavourian was one of the people I played with sometimes in New York, and then David Ying from the Ying Quartet, who was also my roommate at for a short while, and some other cellist, Eric Kim, who is now teaching on the faculty at Cincinnati, at Indiana University, and a couple of other wonderful cellists in New York area. So, but I would like to do more.
Is it fairly common for collaborative artists to specialize in working with one instrument, or not so?
Depends. But I think generally you got to decide, well, it's because of how busy you may get, is either you're going to do instrumental or vocal. I started off in London while I was a pianist, solo pianist. I started playing for singers, which I think has helped me immensely. I started with wonderful singers in London at the Royal Academy of Music, and then branched off to playing for instrumentalists, because I myself played violin, so I was in a string quartet there, and for chamber music, and I was also in a piano trio playing piano. So I think I had the best of both worlds for a while. And then I decided, I want to stick with string players more. But, because it's a time factor. You cannot do everything. And a lot of collaborators, I think, do both. But I don't know about in the profession. I think there are the top ones, probably a couple of them, I think they mostly specialize in, the singers, singing collaborators do vocal stuff, and the instrumental ones do instrumental. And some of them branch off to one particular instrument. But I'm open to most string players anyway, most string repertoire.
Give me a little bit of information on your earlier background. You're from Sri Lanka. I know not a lot about the country, very little, other than actually some of the political turmoil that seems to be going on there lately. But what's musical training like there? What's the musical environment?
Well,
was it when you were growing up?
Well, I started piano at the age of 3 because I had a wonderful teacher who was my mother, and I studied with her for 11 years until she passed on. So I was only 14 when I lost my mother. And as I said, I started violin with another teacher. And when my mother passed on when I was 14, the violin teacher, who also taught piano, who was very special, I went to her for 2 years before I went to London. So I think hearing music at my home, because my mom was a very well-known teacher in Sri Lanka, gave me inspiration, and I first started playing piano by ear, by just thumping little nursery rhymes by ear, with one finger when I was 3 years old, and she thought that I should at least learn the notes. So from there on, I guess I showed an interest, wanted to pursue it more. And that's how the beginning took place.
And what's the role or the prominence of classical music in Sri Lanka traditional music?
There's a lot of talent back home in Sri Lanka in classical music nowadays. But the issue is that the talent is there, and the resources are not there as much as one would like to have, because, the people there, of course, promote the traditional music, which is also fabulous, but the Western culture, now there's a certain, there's a certain crowd that will go to the Western performances, and we do have artists coming there on their way to Singapore, stopping there and giving a recital or playing with our orchestra, which is semi-professional orchestra. But I think we like to see more of it happening, and there are very fine artists, a couple of them at the Met Opera in New York, who's a fabulous soprano, Daniel Deniz, and I just heard an opera singer the other day from Sri Lanka, but who has never even been to Sri Lanka, who's a tenor, Sean Panikka, who's a wonderful young tenor from Sri Lanka, who was in Strauss's Ariadne of Naxos, which was last weekend. So we do have people that are talented, and people who are in Europe, a couple of them, actually mostly vocal, you'll be surprised. And we have a wonderful cellist of Sri Lanka origin in London based, Rohan de Serum, kind of interesting that it's got a similar name, who was the cellist of the Arditi Quartet and who has just retired, studied with Pablo Casals. Wonderful cellist, wonderful. So, you know, there are a few people. I mean, from a small country of that size, I think it's enough, you know. It's all right.
Does pretty well putting out a number of people.
Yeah, it is kind of rare. But I think as I said, the talent is there. So to find the resources, because it's so expensive to go overseas and study. And in Sri Lanka, because of the culture, et cetera, you got, if you want to pursue Western music or the arts, you got to go overseas. You got to go to a Western country and pursue it seriously.
And so you did.
Yes, so I did. I think I was very fortunate because I came from a very middle-class family, and I'm an only child. And, my parents couldn't afford to send me to London, but I was fortunate in getting a scholarship from the Royal School for Music in London for further study to go to England. And then I was also very lucky to be the first presidential scholar in the arts from the former president of Sri Lanka, the very first executive president of Sri Lanka to come to New York to the Juilliard School.
And in a sense, you've never left the Juilliard School.
I know, I feel like that. I've been there since 81 when I came as a student, and then, of course, I was privileged to join the faculty, the Collaborative Arts and Chair Music Faculty in 1991. And here I am.
Well, I want to ask you in a little bit about this, the collaborative art, or
yes,
the art of collaboration. But first, let's let our listeners give you a listen. I have here one excerpt of a recording you made,
yes,
with the then 16-year-old Gil Shaham.
Yes.
That is quite a wonderful program. And there's this little piece by Elgar, La Capricieuse.
Oh, beautiful piece, yes.
Yeah.
Charming piece.
Which means roughly what? The capricious girl or something like that?
Precious girl.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, let's just give a listen and
sure,
then ask you about it afterwards. It's Rohan de Silva, the pianist with violinist Gil Shaham, music by Elgar here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Music by Edward Elgar, La Capricieuse, with violinist Gil Shaham and my guest for this portion of Live and Local, Rohan de Silva, the pianist. And Gil Shaham was all of 16. I don't know I don't recall how old he is now, but that was a pretty young effort for him, and it sounds beautiful, and you sound terrific.
Thank you. It's very strange because I just saw Gil last week on the street, and I just said, Gil, what are you, 36? He said, man, I'm 39. I said, oh, my God, you've grown up. The sweetest, humble guy that I've known even when he was 16 years old. And he has stayed, and he has done so wonderfully, and he's a wonderful violinist and artist, and he's such a humble guy, you know. And fortunately, you know, he lives right opposite my building in New York.
Oh, does he really?
But I hardly ever see him because, you know, he's on the road a lot. And we live right across the street, same street.
And are you working with him currently at all?
No, I think he works with different pianists. I think one of the pianists is his sister, Orly Shaham.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And we've done our own thing, and you build collaboration with different artists, and then you go on from there. But he's a wonderful person and a fabulous artist, and even at the age of 16, let me tell you, I knew he was going to have an actually major career, you know.
You know, he's an Illinois boy.
Yes, he was born in Champaign-Urbana, because his dad, unfortunately, who has passed on, used to be on the faculty there.
Really? What was
his
name?
Jacob Shaham. Jacob Shaham, who passed on, and that's when Gil was born.
Wow.
both his parents are very intelligent people. You know, his father was an astrophysicist, and his mom, who still runs a lab in human genetics, very brilliant family, and the children are also obviously very smart and bright.
And extremely talented.
Yeah, extremely talented.
Well, I want to ask you about this collaborative thing. You know, you indicated that you develop relationships with certain people, and he works with certain pianists,
yes,
and you work with certain violinists and so on. And you use very deliberately the term collaborative artist.
Yes.
And I noticed that Juilliard apparently uses that term,
yes,
whereas, let's say, the University of Illinois says piano accompaniment.
Yeah.
Accompanying.
I completely detest that word.
I noticed that.
I very much do.
So talk about, talk a bit about the role of the collaborator.
Well, collaborating with someone is you work together. It's a joint effort. And I think it's very important for people to understand and to know that in the olden day, during Jascha Heifetz's age, they used to call a pianist, if you play with a violinist or a cellist or any other instrument, an accompanist. Well, that is, I believe, that is during those days, the programming was much different. They used to play a concerto with piano, and you are the orchestra, and probably do a Handel sonata. I'm talking regarding violinists. You do a Handel sonata followed by a concerto with piano, because orchestras were not as many as these days. And then you do some lighter works in the second half. You know, now it's the big, you know, recital programs are mostly duos. And a duo, for instance, like Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, Schubert, those piano parts are absolutely equal, or sometimes even much more complicated for piano than violin, and the composer specifically says on the music, sonatas for piano and violin. So, you know, that's the standard repertoire. So this is a real true collaboration when you work together. You give your ideas to each other. You, you know, it's, you're not just listening to the artist saying, okay, you listen, you follow me, and that's it. So I think this is something that people have to know. This is a true collaboration. Collaborate means you are equal partners.
Sure.
In, you know, and I think the audience now has realized that, and they still have to, you know, some people don't realize this, but I think we as pianists who are collaborators have to absolutely be adamant that this is not accompanying. Accompanying, in that sense, I think is for the smaller works like this, the Kreisler pieces, the Heifetz pieces, and that is truly accompanying, where you, you know, you got to follow the artist. You got to follow, that's the little dessert after the main course. But the first half of a recital generally is all sonatas, consists of sonatas. And so the programming has also differed. I mean, has changed since 30 years ago of how artists perceive their pianist. So when I hear the word accompanying program, I'm like, oh my gosh, they should change it. You know, I think we should get the Champaign-Illinois University to try to reword it so that, you know, it's, and even with a vocalist, when you do some big works, you know, that's a collaboration, you know.
Well, the baritone Nathan Gunn,
yes,
is on faculty here,
sure,
as is his wife Julie, who is,
yes,
who is in the piano accompanying division,
yes,
and they did a recital at the Krannert Center here, I think, in the fall,
yes,
and she actually had some solo pieces where he did some stuff. You know, they did some stuff together. They did some stuff in trio with another singer,
She
did some solo things.
Yes.
But some of the works for, you know, with the vocalists were operatic reductions, and her role was enormous, you know, incredibly
absolutely
difficult.
First of all, you had to portray an orchestra. You had to have that kind of a sound to the best of your ability to sound like an orchestra. So this is, you know, it's not just tinkling the ivories, you know. It's really, you've got to, you know, you have to really do a lot of work. And, you know, it's all, that's why I say it's a true collaboration. Or you are built as a, you should be built as a pianist or a collaborator. And I am absolutely gung-ho about it. And I will make sure that it's not, you know, it doesn't happen, or no one builds the pianist as an accompanist.
Right. I want to read you something here that I thought was really quite to this point. It's by some person named Laurie online. It was otherwise no further credit the review that I found somewhere of a recital you gave apparently last September with Itzhak Perlman, Leclerc, Beethoven, and Stravinsky. And
where was that?
Here's the line. Well, let's see. Oh, yeah, University of Michigan. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yep. Ann Arbor. Okay.
Yeah. So here goes.
She great says, hall, by the way. Great
oh,
hall.
Is that right? Good.
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course, you'll be in a great one on the 3rd of March. On my birthday, by the way, you're playing that recital on my birthday.
Well, happy birthday for the 3rd of March, and we hope to see you afterwards.
Well, I might even catch the end of it after choir rehearsal
and
come to the party. And if I'm there, I'm going to stand up and say, I'm here, and at which point I want one of the encores to be.
Happy birthday.
Absolutely not. All right, here we go. She says, quote, I'm not going to lie. I came to the concert to hear Itzhak Perlman, not Rohan da Silva. But I don't want to downplay the pianist's part in the performance. Rohan da Silva's playing was also excellent, expressive, sensitive, dynamic. And this is the real crux of it here. She says, at first, I focused my attention solely on Perlman, fascinated by his technical facility, et cetera, et cetera. But I soon realized that much of the music's complexity came from the interplay between piano and violin, the contrast of musical textures, the back-and-forth exchange of the melody. And she comments, I like the phrase in the program's notes on Rohan da Silva collaborative piano. So it sounds like here's somebody who's just sort of discovering this little, not very small bit of information.
Yes, but I think that's very sweet of her for the kind comment she has made about me, but I think that's a person who has studied it and now realizes how important the pianist is in a recital. You know, there are two people. And sometimes people, I mean, there have been instances, I just think it's very funny sometimes. I was playing in Florida with Itzhak Perlman a few years ago, and we were signing autographs at the end, and there was a long line, et cetera, et cetera. And there was a very sweet old lady who came and came up to me and said, who are you? Now, I'm in my tuxedo. So Mr. Perlman looked at me and laughed, and he's like, there we go. And I said, I guess you found it, you must have been in the balcony. And she said, the people behind her said, well, he's the pianist. And of course, she was very sweet. But it's just that, you know, sometimes people come, of course, he's a huge name. And I love that. But, you know, there's two of them on the stage. And I guess she, you know, realized it then that she should have not said that. But I thought it was very hilarious. And then I said, oh, well, maybe you were not in a spot to, you know, that maybe she had some, you know, sort of a partial view seat or whatever. But there you go, you know. So things like that have happened. But you just, you know, try to explain it to the person and show the importance of being a collaborator.
And you just continue your campaign.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, here is a more recent recording than that with Gil Shaham. And this is, in fact, the opening movement of a very famous sonata, that of César Franck. The violinist here is Jura Schmidt. Is he Austrian or German?
No, Jura Schmidt actually is from Israel.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that the first name would give that away, I guess.
But you know something? The funny thing is, Gyula Schmidt's parents, who are both musicians, and I, we were all studying together in London at the Royal Academy of Music. And little did I know, till about 10 years ago, that this is the offspring of the parents. I mean, they were just married when we were studying in London, and what a small world. You come to New York, and then you suddenly meet this wonderful violinist, and then you talk and this and that, and then you realize, oh my gosh, your parents and I studied together. We had a bunch of interesting people studying who have major careers now. One was David Robertson, the conductor.
Conductor at St. Louis Symphony now.
Yeah. Who's this? Sir, oh gosh, I forgot. I'm terribly sorry. Conductor of the Berlin Philharmonic, Simon Rattle.
Yep.
We were all colleagues at the same class in London. You know.
It was quite a time to be there, apparently.
Yes.
Well, let's hear some César Franck. And here's a real collaborative piece for you. Opening movement of César Franck's sonata in A for piano and violin.
That one says actually violin and piano.
Does it? Well, then, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, big. for.
Giora Schmidt, violin, Rohan de Silva, piano, who is my guest on this portion of Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was music by César Franck, the opening movement of his Sonata in A for violin and piano, Giora Schmidt, the violinist, and Rohan de Silva, the pianist. And that was released just a few years ago, I think 2007. Yeah. And Rohan is my guest here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. He's going to be performing with violinist Stefan Milenkovic on Wednesday the 3rd at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Concert starts at 7:30, and it's quite a nice program of fairly well-known, actually many of them very well-known pieces, kind of show pieces, but I think Stefan didn't like that term when I used it when we were talking, because he said, you know, these are wonderful pieces of music, period, and a lot by Sarasate and some other wonderful things as well. I do want to ask you, since we've talked about Itzhak Perlman, and he is, you know, as you said, a rather big name, what is the relationship like, and what's he like to work with?
Oh, well, first of all, I think I feel so humbled to work with somebody of this great stature, and he's a great human being. For me, that says it all, because not only being a fabulous artist, he's a good person. And he treats me with such respect, and you know, he's with dignity, and he's, you know, he's a, you know, he's like way up there. And for me, you know, I'm honored to play with him, and we have a lot of fun when we're on the road. On the road, he is so gracious and humble, and you know, he's tough in a very good sense. And if he has something to say about when you play, he will say it. He knows exactly how to say it, not to offend people and not to offend me, but in a very gracious way. And, you know, he will just give a suggestion, and the suggestions have always been correct, but not many, very few, extremely few suggestions. And, you know, and that's how we improve our collaboration day by day, you know. And now I have worked with him for 11 years. This is my 11th season. And every time I get on stage with him, I'm like, sometimes, you know, there are times where he's so busy and we do not have time to rehearse. But he makes you feel comfortable on stage, which is very rare for people. Even if you don't have any time to rehearse, he makes you, there's something charming about him that even before the concert, he knows that I'm sort of a little nervous or whatever. And so is he, we are human. But he, you know, gives you that sort of a comfort zone where I don't think many people can do that, to make you feel kind of at ease. You're kind of nervous, but at the same time, it's good nerves, you know. And I'm just glad to play with somebody like that. And of course, then your musicianship goes to a different level at that point. You truly collaborate. He's a wonderful, sensitive listener. So when we do our sonata stuff, it is a real, absolute 100% collaboration where you both give your ideas, you do things spontaneously on stage. You don't have to rehearse it. You know, that's what collaboration is all about, spontaneity, you know, with each person, and you react immediately. That's what a collaborative pianist has to do.
And I assume, obviously, since it is a collaboration, I mean, he may offer a few suggestions to you, and you the other way around.
Absolutely.
When
absolutely.
You're preparing
for partnership. Absolutely. And he always listens to your suggestions whenever, you know, even if it's once in a blue moon, I do make a suggestion or two. Absolutely. That's the whole point. You know, it's not just a one-way deal, you know. It's like a marriage. It's like a relationship, you know. You've got to work at it, and then you know, I mean, hopefully we have never had any disagreements as far as interpretation is concerned, you know. And It's great. And so, that's a similar thing I have with Stefan. You know, Stefan and I, we don't see each other often because he's in Champaign, Illinois. I'm in New York. But when we play together, it's a whole different world because we speak to each other through our music. And we, you know, we really, you know, sometimes we just look at each other like, oh, my gosh, that's so scary, because he would do something, but I have already anticipated what he's going to do. I mean, that's when you really know someone extremely well, you know. And that's why I love playing with Stefan. And we've been friends for so many years. I don't even remember. It was like in the 80s, late 80s or something, I met Stefan in Hanover, Germany.
I think he said 93.
Oh, was it 93?
Yeah.
I guess so. Time has gone by anyway. And he was just 16 years old. And then he came to New York to study under the late Dorothy DeLay, which I think was the best thing he did. And from there on, you know, we had become good friends. We, you know, he's come to Sri Lanka and played for the disabled people 4 times, you know. And he told me yesterday that he wants to go back to Sri Lanka. I said, yes, it'll happen. Let's try to do it next year. And we love him in Sri Lanka. And he's just a good human being, too. I mean, he's just a normal guy, you know, and a very genuine guy. Now, this is important. So that speaks through the music, because he's a genuine person. And there again, Itzhak Perlman, a very genuine, honest person, you know.
You made an analogy earlier to a marriage just a few months ago. And I'm glad you did, because if I remember right, maybe it was just before you started to work with Itzhak Perlman, his most frequent pianist, I think, was Samuel Sanders.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it? And he died.
Unfortunately.
Was it cancer? Long battle with cancer, or
no? He had a very severe heart issue.
That's
he was
right.
Born with a hole in the heart.
Yeah, long
he
time.
Was my colleague, a very well-respected colleague, and I dearly miss Sam because Sam Sanders started campaigning for the collaborative pianist, that this is not an accompanist title, that this is a real collaboration. And if he was alive today, boy, I think the rest of the world would have learned something from that. And that's why we are trying to take that forward, you know.
What I wanted to ask you, though, is, you know, in that case, here was a marriage between Sanders and Perlman that
for 30-odd years.
That was ended sort of tragically,
yes.
Not by anybody's desire.
No.
And then he had to find a new marriage partner, and he found you. What was the process of finding that relationship and then nurturing it?
Well, I think that was in 1998, yes. And but a couple of times before, in 1991, when Samuel Sanders had the first heart transplant performed on him, I was given the opportunity of playing with Itzhak Perlman, and we worked for 4 months together. As in performed concerts. And, you know, at that time, I mean, to play with this guru was just like, oh, my gosh, can I deal with this, you know? But, you know, I guess I overcome that fear and whatever that comes with it, and I was able to do it. And subsequently, when Sam was all right, he started playing concerts with Itzhak Perlman. And then occasionally, when there were some health issues on Sam's side, I used to be called to, and Sam always informed me, saying, look, Itzhak is going to call you because I cannot do this concert. I've got to go into the hospital or whatever. So we kind of kept this relationship, you know, since 91. And when I had to step in when Sam was very ill and went through the second heart transplant, and unfortunately that didn't work out. And I was, of course, informed right before he passed on that, you know, this is really bleak, etc. So mentally I had to adjust and think, oh my gosh. And when that particular season when Sam had passed away, I believe it was in July of 98, I think, and in October or November the same year, we had a New York recital at Avery Fisher Hall, which was, of course, dedicated to Samuel Sanders, rightfully so. And I knew that the New York audiences were waiting to see. And that was a lot of pressure on me. That was an enormous amount of pressure on me because everybody was with the critics, etc. The New York audiences were waiting to see how I would do. And thankfully, I was able to, you know, do it quite okay. and got a very nice review, etc. But I think after that, it felt a little more comfortable. And so you build, you're thrown into the deep end of the swimming pool and you have to swim. And then, keep your head above water and try to, do it to the best of your ability. And I guess so far I have done it.
Well enough, at least.
Yeah, well, I think I've been very fortunate and I'm very grateful every day. And I'm humbled by all the whatever achievements and the compliments that people give me. But, it never stops. You always keep on learning and you always want to do better. That's something you must never get carried away by all the compliments that people give. That's nice. Thank you very much. But you got to, achieve for more, and make yourself a better artist. And that's something that we never stop. You never stop learning, So I've been very lucky.
And we'll hear the product of your longtime collaboration with Stefan Milenkovic on Wednesday the 3rd at the Krannert Center. A nice, very nice program. And we have just a couple of minutes here, and I have this one question that I'm really just dying to ask because it is so important.
Yes.
I see that you were once, and maybe more than once, with Midori on The Tonight Show.
Once, yes.
Yeah, so I really want to know, where do you come down on the Conan Leno issue?
Listen, oh my God.
And you don't even have to answer that.
No. But when I played with Midori on The Tonight Show, who the other guest was? Bill Cosby.
Oh, Bill Cosby, yeah.
Oh, yes. So cannot get better company than that, right? And
so,
that was during,
I don't remember how long people have been on The Tonight Show. Was Carson, was he hosting at that
Johnny
point?
Johnny Carson?
He was the host?
Absolutely. It was Johnny Carson.
Well, then, these other two, just never mind.
Yeah.
There is
you
nobody. Well, let's go out here with another collaboration between Rohan da Silva and Gyura Schmidt. This is music by Manuel de Falla from his Suite Populaire Espagnole, the final movement, the Jota, which I love a lot and play wonderfully. And
thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'll see you on Wednesday night.
Certainly shall.
Thanks so much.